May is Mental Health Month, and on this weekend's Focus on the Community, we will talk about signs of mental illness and how to reduce teen suicide with two special guests. Melvin Burks is the president and CEO of Hamilton Center, and Megan Creech is the chief of utilities officer at Hamilton Center. Well, good morning. This is Focus on the Community, and one of our topics that we want to touch on this month, it is Mental Health Month across the country, and we have two very special guests with us today on the phone. From the Hamilton Center, we have Mr. Melvin Burks, the president and CEO, and we also have Megan Creech. Good morning to both Mel and Megan. Thanks for being on the program today.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
Well, who wants to start? Mental Health Month, obviously a lot of focus nationwide on just making sure that we take some time during the month of May to focus on mental health. And I guess I'll start with you, Mel. You've had a lot of experience over the last four decades running the Hamilton Center out of Terre Haute, which serves a lot of counties in West Central Indiana. But it just seems to me that there's not enough focus these days on a lot of people who are struggling with mental health issues. I guess if you had to give a scorecard to what's going well and what may not be going so well when it comes to mental health services, tell us, I guess, where is the state of mental health when it comes to our region of the country right now and all the various services that can be found not only at your place, but just in general by the public if they need mental health support?
Well, let me start off by saying this, and thank you for having us on the show. I would like to, first of all, start off with break the stigma. There's a stigma on mental illness, and it's been in this country for a long time. And what I've seen of late, a sort of cracking that stigma just a little bit. I think in terms of when I turn on the TV, I'm seeing more individuals talking about mental illness. The athletes are talking about mental illness, and individuals in other professions, whether it's maybe in terms of their actors or actress, they're talking about mental illness. So I'm seeing a little crack of trying to push that stigma away. And I think that I have this here thought and philosophy that if we can care for each other or go to hospitals when we have a broken leg or a broken arm or we have a slash on our head or been shot, and people are not afraid to go to the hospital for those things. But one of the most important muscles within our brain that it breaks down and people begin to look at us differently. So I'm saying the more people understand that it is okay, you're not alone. There's individuals out there, organizations that's out there that would be willing to help you, and then realize that you have value. So I am saying that it is a movement that I see. I would like to see more of it, the stigma being broken as it relates to mental illness. Now, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Ms. Creech.
Absolutely. I completely agree with what you've stated thus far. I think it's important to understand that although there is a cracking in the stigma, although there is some increased awareness, I've seen ads within hospitals, within school districts, within extracurricular programs, that we keep in mind that May being Mental Health Month, we like to focus on that stigma. We like to reduce that stigma. We like for individuals to become aware of the services that are out there to treat any issues that may come about. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, looking at some recent estimates from Johns Hopkins, 1 in 4 adults experience mental illness, and 8 million children and adolescents in the United States suffer from serious mental illness. So this is not something that's hiding. That's not something that's few and far between. Truly, behavioral health touches each and every one of us.
Indeed. And one thing that I think that's made it more challenging the past 3 years, we've went through this 100-year pandemic, you know, called COVID-19, And it's really changed people's lifestyles. And we had so much stress related to everything that COVID brought to the whole country, let alone the world in 2020. And people's lifestyles just got even more stressful, not only dealing with the COVID-related issues. Now we've pivoted into all the disruptions that COVID brought to the world, from supply chain issues, inflation, higher prices. You know, that's got to be taking a toll on everyone's mental health.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think that the wide array of changes that we've experienced over the past couple of years has definitely had an impact on behavioral health, not only with the adults who, like you said, they're experiencing possibly, you know, change in job, change in supply chain, change in cost of different products, but also with children. You know, they have learned a new normalcy of being in school or being homeschooled, being able to participate in extracurricular activities versus, you know, having that on hold. So not only the changes within our lifestyles, but also that social impact. So being able to see children in the classroom, being able to see a smile from you know, an adult with a newborn baby, not having a mask or having a mask, things of that nature. I think that it's all brought a new perspective to all of us.
Let's talk about some of the signs of mental illness. It may be a person that could be a close loved one, or it could be someone that you interact with at work each and every day. But give us some basic understanding of what would be the clear signs that someone may be experiencing mental illness.
Sure. So, like you said, this can be both with somebody who lives in your household or somebody who you work with, or maybe somebody that you just see in the grocery market. I think it's important to understand that any change in behavior, whether it be minimal or drastic, is taken seriously. I think that it's important that we all have resources or a clear understanding of access to care. Just as Mr. Burke stated earlier, you know, if somebody were injured, we would know, take them to the emergency room, take them to their physician. You know, when somebody's experiencing a behavioral health crisis, we need to have a clear understanding of the access to care as well. Is this emergent? Is it something that we can talk to our primary care physician about? Do we need to come to the access center at the Hamilton Center? Do we need to reach out for outpatient care, therapy, group therapy, family therapy? But understanding that those resources are here within your community and understanding how to access them.
Well, we definitely want to get a better understanding in the program of what Hamilton Center specifically can do. But I do want to touch on this before we get into all the various resources you offer. Last weekend, we had this horrible situation out of Buffalo where we had a person who clearly had intentions of hurting others just because of their skin color. And then we had two other incidents in other parts of the country. California comes to mind, where we've just had these people that have taken guns and they want to go out to harm other people. I don't know how many warning signs were out there, although I know on the young 18-year-old that was in Buffalo, clearly something took place at his school several months ago that gave them a concern, but yet it did not instigate any red flag laws that were out there that were recently passed, but somehow it was not on the radar. Would you guys consider what took place over the last weekend and these hate crimes, is that a form of mental illness, or is that just some other thing that's a little bit different down the mental illness road?
Well, I would say that, look, I mean, we can put tags on things like that and we can be correct or we can be wrong because we really don't know. But I think individuals who are going out to do something, who is 18 years old or whether they're 89 years old, we got to think about the environment in which we live in. What is being fed to us on a daily basis in terms of as far as how we are as human beings and how we should behave? And I think that you can see that there's things that have happened in our country over the years that has been shown signs of people killing people. And we have had that in our communities, but these are mass murders where individuals are being killed at 5 at a time, 10 at a time, being wounded, and so on and so forth. So could that be a sign of mental illness? I can say it could be, but is it? Or is it just a pure act of what individuals are just wanting to do? And I'm saying that our community, our society, have really become very volatile when someone doesn't like someone else for whatever reason. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, politically, we've seen it the past 6 years or so where it just seems like, you know, we used to be disagreeable without being disagreeable. I mean, if you know what I mean. In other words, it was okay to have a different of opinion on public policy matters, but now it's gotten so personal that, you know, you're either with us or you're against us, and now we've got this lack of trying to build consensus to make our communities better. It's just that there just seems to be very less gray anymore. You're either for something or against something, and if you're not on the same team, how dare you, I guess. And that's got to create more tensions, let alone challenges for mental health care.
I was thinking in terms of dealing with, it's tragic that what took place in Buffalo and in California. It is tragic and it's sad. And it is something that we as a society, we need to understand that we as human beings need to pull together and we need to listen. We need to respect the individual regardless of who they are or where they come from, to let them know that they have value. And I think that's what you're seeing less of in our country, that people who are different do have value. And I would say that when you ask the question about could this be an individual who is going through some mental illness, it could be. But what we don't want to do is put that stigma on mental illness that the person has done it because they're mentally ill. We want to say in terms of let's really do the research and find out and investigate what is the cause of why someone is taking a gun and shooting someone. It could be a normal way of life for that person. We don't know. But I would say this to you. There are community mental health centers around the world. And I know that they're open to see anyone who have issues with mental illness. And we should direct those individuals to those places. Whether a family member, whether a community partner, we need to direct the individuals to those places that are going to provide them some service, like here at Hamilton Center. And if you don't come to Hamilton Center, there's other places in our community that individuals can go to. But I would say this to you. I would say this. I am a person of color, and I know it's easy for an individual to ask me that question, because what is being said that this person went to this town, Buffalo, and he shot, all the people that he killed were people of color. Now, he probably had this feeling that they have done wrong to them, somehow has done wrong. And I've heard some information, I don't know if you've heard this, they're saying that if you look at his weapon closely, he has names of individuals where an incident happened in Milwaukee where an individual drove a vehicle through a crowd of people and hurt those individuals. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But apparently he had the name of those individuals that died, and so he was trying, it could be, or considered that he was provoking some act of revenge on what took place in Milwaukee.
Yeah, he also had some racist, items on his gun, too, I noticed. I mean, he used the N-word and actually painted it right on the AR, if I saw the correct picture from the weekend, which is just very sad to see that in 2022. But before we get into a lot of the services that your center offers, I want to touch on this because I had a former sister-in-law that this, and you probably know who I'm talking about when I bring this up, down in Sullivan County, goes on vacation with her teenage son and her two younger boys. They get back, and a few days later, this young man commits suicide. And they had no warning signs whatsoever that this young man was on the verge of doing this to himself. And, the mother, of course, and the father are both heartbroken. All the families are still trying to come to grips with what took place. And she's more committed than ever to trying to help other families to see certain warning signs if a teen is challenge with mental health issues, but it seems like the statistics that I've been reading the past year or two, teen suicides are up. Is that a fair statement?
I would say, I'm going to say a little bit about this, and I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Creed. I would say that that is true. It is up. And I tell you, one of the most invisible signs is depression. When I say that, someone can be in a deep depression and you don't even know it.
Yep.
You will see whether the person, and there's been female athletes who have shown everything is okay, they're smiling and laughing, just won an event, and the next day they take their lives. I don't know if you've been keeping up with that, but the female athletes in college has committed suicide at a large rate, and this is pretty localized in different areas. So depression is something that we definitely have to be more aware or attuned to. Individuals are struggling. And just because someone is smiling doesn't mean that they're okay.
And it sounds to me like there's a lot of evidence showing that maybe social media has maybe made this situation worse, because some of our teenagers are seeing some of these wonderful lives of some of their peers, and they don't quite match up maybe to some of their peers, and then that kind of makes them go into a depression, and then all of a sudden they're taking drastic steps. Is there anything you could share with our listeners? If you're seeing changes amongst a teenager or a relative, what are some of the warning signs? Megan, do you want to take a crack at that?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, currently suicide is the third leading cause of death in young people ages 15 to 24. We are currently looking at teenagers much differently than we have in the past. You know, teen years are a stressful time. They are filled with major changes, right? So you're talking about body changing, change in thoughts, change in feelings. They may have strong feelings of stress. They may have that confusion. They may have fear. They may have doubt. I think that just having that pressure to succeed can be a lot for some teenagers. You know, looking at the current statistics and what's going on in the world today, I think that you need to take a look at, are there major changes in the family? Was there possibly a separation in the parents? Was the family moving to a new town? Is there a change in friendships? We know those teenagers can have their cliques. Are there any issues with the child in school? Or potential other losses? Was a family member lost, a pet lost, something of that nature that may seem too hard for the teenager to overcome, or maybe too embarrassing for them to overcome? At that point in time, I think that's when we need to recognize those changes, and then really look for those signs and signals. Strike up the conversation with your teenager if you are concerned. That's not something we should let just sit by the wayside. I think that bringing it to communication, having that outright conversation, how are you feeling? What are you feeling? And then seeking out the appropriate resources for your teenager, just as you would an adult or a family friend or a coworker.
Well, let's dive into some of the services that Hamilton Center provides. And I guess one question that I know comes up occasionally, not all insurances will help with mental health support, which I think is tragic in 2022. But let me just bring this up. If you've got someone listening to the radio station right now and they know of either an adult or a teenager who needs some type of help, but all they can think about is, you know, I can't even pay for gas. How am I going to be able to pay for this mental health support? What kind of services are available to those who may not have an insurance card, or they may not even have the resources, but they clearly need help? What could you say to these people today?
Sure. What I would say, first off, adults, adolescents, children, if you're having any issues, behavioral health, addiction, primary care, come to the Hamilton Center. I understand and agree with you the absurdness of insurance not paying for behavioral health treatment. However, we can help. The Hamilton Center has 23 certified navigators on staff to assist with ensuring that individuals have the appropriate insurance for treatment. And then outside of that, if the individual cannot obtain the appropriate insurance, Hamilton Center will service regardless of ability to pay.
That's good to hear. And you're technically a not-for-profit corporation, right?
Yes.
Okay. So obviously the insurance companies that do provide behavioral assistance can help, you know, pay for this service. But if you do have someone who is indigent or they just don't have the resources, I mean, do you have certain funds that kind of help pay for this? Or how does this all work, I guess, internally without too much details?
Sure, absolutely. The Hamilton Center has a multitude of ways for individuals to access care. We have what we call a clinical necessity where we're able to reduce the amount that the individual has to pay or completely deplete that balance for them.
Okay.
We do have funds to take care of individuals who need that treatment for behavioral health, addiction, and primary care services. We also have a sliding fee scale that may assist somebody in paying an appropriate amount in relation to what they earn.
Okay, fair enough. And then what else do you want the community to know about Hamilton Center services specifically, if they're not only if they've got a troubled youth or just an adult that are going through some tough times? I guess the first thing they need to do is call a certain number and talk to someone. Is there some kind of an intake process that would get this ball rolling for that person that needs your help?
Sure, absolutely. So we service the entire continuum of care, children through adulthood, and we also have services for individuals who may need minor assistance to those who may be in crisis at the specific time of services as well. All that anybody would have to do is either walk in to the front door of one of our facilities or reach out to our access department at any point in time for further services. We can also direct if there's another community resource that may be needed as well.
Okay. And Melvin.
I just want to say in terms of dealing with what Ms. Creech is saying is that Hamilton Center has a model that we turn no one away. We turn no one away. And that's hard to, it's hard for us to live up to that because there's so many people in need and they don't want it tomorrow. They want to be served today. And I understand that. Serving today. So we try to change our system somewhat to make sure that we can get to individuals sooner. But we are willing to serve individuals or direct individuals to other agencies that will also serve them. If we're not able to serve at the time of need, then we need to change our corporation.
Yeah, I understand. And then
you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And then let me ask you guys this. Are there support groups that are out there? Let's just say that, you know, my wife, for example, is a retired school teacher, and I'm not trying to commit her, but I'm just going to use her as an example. You know, she's a good communicator when it comes to relatives and just people that sometimes she'll meet for the first time, and she's a very good listener. It seems to me, whether it's her or anyone else out there listening, they may go to a church or another local service club, and they can tell that someone is having some type of stress or challenges. Are there any kind of support groups or other services that could be available to kind of help people kind of know more signs of mental illness, but can be a better friend to that person to try to help them get through stressful times before they get a professional therapist to kind of diagnose everything? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that having some understanding, we all know individuals who are excellent listeners and who have the ability to recognize potential issues. I think that there are a couple of things that really can enhance that ability. One is question, persuade, refer, also known as QPR training. And this is a training that Hamilton Center offers. This is a training that allows individuals to recognize potential for somebody who may be having a behavioral health crisis and what the next steps are. So literally asking the questions, persuading them to get treatment, and then referring to the appropriate treatment provider. as you said, somebody like your wife may be able to listen and have that understanding, but then she'll want to refer off to a behavioral health provider who has that expertise and background to be able to treat the individual. Also, there's a training that's called Mental Health First Aid, and it, just like QPR, is what it sounds. So we know how to do first aid for individuals who may be experiencing some sort of primary care issue. We know CPR, we know how to bandage somebody appropriately, but what do you do in the grocery store when you see somebody who might be having an issue and need assistance from there? So it teaches you those main elements of how to handle the individual to get them to the appropriate resource for care.
And I would say this to you, and just one thing that I'd be amiss if I don't bring up this particular incident, not incident, but thing. One, law enforcement are very good partners of community mental health. And what we have to do is provide more education and training for the law enforcement, because they're willing and they're ready. We have a program that we're dealing with called CCBHC. I'll let Ms. Creech tell you more about that, but I'm telling you, we have to, our community, to provide a blanket service, we have to be more in tune in working together, the agencies and the law enforcement officers. We have to be more in tune in working together and working with churches.
Yeah, and I can give you a few more seconds, Megan, but we're about out of time. But that sounds like the police are definitely on the ground in most communities when there's a lot of stress going on, and they definitely could use those type of tips and services, I'm sure.
Sure, absolutely. And we do have that strong partnership, and we do oftentimes see the officers reaching out to us. How can they assist? What's the most appropriate pathway to care? I think that what's most important is that we provide the telephone number to our access services to anybody who may need assistance. It's 1-800-742-0787, and don't hesitate to reach out.
Okay, and I'm going to let you give that number one more time.
Absolutely. 1-800-742-0787.
And even though I know most will probably Google it, what's the Hamilton Center's web address?
Sure, absolutely. It's hamiltoncenter.org.
Okay, and I guess the bottom line that I'd like to sum up the program with, you know, people don't always have any understanding of what a lot of folks are going through, and it just seems like we need to be kinder, but we also need to be more empathetic to other people, because, you know, you never, as the old saying goes, you never know what someone's going through until you've walked a mile in their moccasins or whatever. And I just think that if we could all kind of tone it down just a bit and be a little more open-minded to people's problems and challenges, it would be a lot better place right now. And maybe we could help, you know, take the mental illness situation and put it in a better light and just help people overall, because we're not all professional therapists, but we can always be a friend to help that person through tough times.
I agree with that 100% in terms of, and remember this, we need to also understand that people, regardless of where they're at, have value. They have value.
Absolutely. Well, Melvin Burks, President and CEO of Hamilton Center, as well as Megan Creech, the Chief of Utilities, thanks for taking time and being on Focus on the Community this weekend. We definitely appreciate it.
And thank you for having us.
This has been Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. This program is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 on 104.9 WAXI, Saturdays at 7 on WAMB, AM 1130, 106.9 and 99.5, Sundays at 6 a.m. on 105.5 WVIG, and 7 a.m. on 92.7 WFMB. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.